Jackson. I'm going to repeat that. 37 and a quarter.
Hurry for the lead. Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome to an all-new Dubs Talk presented by Wendy's. Right now at Wendy's, get two breakfast sandwiches for just $4. Start your morning off, get your $4, get two breakfast sandwiches. My goodness, what a deal. I'm Grant Lifman. We got Kendra Andrews with us. As always, we are so close to things really starting to percolate in the NBA. We got training camp around the corner. We got the season coming up. Things are getting pretty spicy around here, Kendra. Now, before we jump into some very important stuff we need to talk about, we have Chris Weems, an interview to share with everybody. We talked to him in Vegas, actually, when we were out there, but we wanted to bring it back now. Why is that, Kendra?
That is because Chris Weems has recently been hired by the Golden State Warriors to become part of their player development team. And that's a great step for the Warriors, for that coaching staff. Grant, we've seen the Warriors make a lot of adjustments with their coaching staff so far this offseason, bringing in a lot of guys who specialize in player development. Now bringing Chris Weems up from the G League, this is just another step in making sure that their younger players are supported. He's worked with JTA, he's worked with Jordan Poole, so he's going to be able to help keep those guys growing, in addition to working with, of course, the draft picks, Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody. This is what Chris Weems does. He works with young, raw talent. So this is a very smart move on behalf of the Warriors.
Yeah, absolutely. If you just look at the coaching staff, as you said before, everything is about player development at this point. They realized they needed to improve in that regard. They brought in Kenny Atkinson. They brought in a whole list of people to come in now and really just hone in on developing players. Also, with that move, Seth Cooper, who was the two-way coach for the Golden State Warriors, now moves over to become the Santa Cruz Warriors head coach. Also, David Fotoki, who is with the Warriors front office, now moves over to become the general manager of the Santa Cruz Warriors. And also Ryan Atkinson, who was the general manager of the Santa Cruz Warriors, goes over the Warriors. So things are mixing and matching a little bit, but it's all great stuff. All of these people are very accomplished and really, really good people, and people that really have bright futures. And I know many times it'd be very just blah news to talk about the G League team of a franchise, but think about how important a G League team has been to the Golden State Warriors. Think about, as you mentioned, JTA, Jordan Poole developed down there. Damian Lee came through there. Michael Mulder came through the G League back in the day. Quinn Cook. They send so many players there, and so many players come up to them that it actually is a big deal. So these are the things that we're going to have to look at. And Weems, as you said, is just another person to add to the list of player development that will make them better. Before we get back to him in a second here, Kendra, I don't know where to start this. I think it starts with this. You and me, we had a conversation with Jonathan Kuminga in Vegas.
We did.
We were asking him what he needs to do in San Francisco. And he said he needed to go see the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
What did you say?
I said he should go because it is a landmark of the city, but I suggested that he do not walk it because it is a very, I believe the word I initially used was it's a bumpy bridge. After being interrogated by Jonathan and yourself, I revised my words to say it's a hilly bridge. It's a hilly bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jonathan Kuminga went to visit the Golden Gate Bridge along with Moses Moody, and I have yet to hear back if he agrees with me that it was a hilly bridge, but it is. Grant, I literally drove across the bridge last week, and I thought, wow, this is quite the hill. So, okay. Jonathan, Moses, let me know if I am right, because yeah. I am.
Yeah, we need to follow up on that. I've heard many things described about the Golden Gate Bridge, the beauty, the grace of such an incredible accomplishment for when it was built, I believe in the 1930s. Amazing things. Bumpy? Not something I've heard.
Okay, Grant, yeah. You and I, mm-hmm. let's meet at the bridge tomorrow. Let's go for a walk and you know, bring some water and bring some sturdy shoes, because like once you get to the peak of it, you're going to be out of breath a little bit.
When I get to the peak, I'll bring my hiking shoes and a walking stick.
Yeah, some oxygen mask because of the elevation.
Yeah. All right. Kuminga, JK, if you're listening right now, which you are, thank you so much for listening as always. Let's chat. We got it. We got to talk about it. We got to review that. One other thing that is very necessary to discuss is a video that went viral. This is Callaway Golf put it out there. And if you haven't seen it yet, go to NBCSportsBayArea.com. And Phil Mickelson, and we all know Steph Curry is a big golf guy, and he plays, he's fantastic. It's amazing how good he is, actually, for just the fact that he's focused on basketball his whole life. He probably could have been a pro in golf if you really put his mind to it. But Phil Mickelson, it has a famous flop shot. It's a trick shot that he does. And it's all fun and games until Steph Curry is standing right in front of him. I don't know the distance. It's probably, what, 2 feet, Kendra? And Phil does the flop shot where it looks like he's shooting a ball straight at him and it goes over him. And it's absolutely terrifying. And I understand why the reaction on Twitter was just the season flashing before everyone's eyes, because it was one of those moments you're like, that's all fun and games, but like, don't hurt Steph Curry.
100%. When I watched it, the thing that blew me away the most is that the way that he swung, or like, I'm not a golf person, so I'm going to butcher the terminology, so just bear with me. But when he like wound up to hit it, it looks like he's about to just hit it, as you said, just normally. And somehow he was able to just bop it over Steph Curry, who's 6'3". And Steph didn't even blink. He didn't even flinch. It was like when Kobe Bryant got the ball kind of faked in his face and just stone cold.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Steph definitely was a little bit more nervous than Kobe looked in that moment, but it's all very impressive. Very impressive.
The Kobe one is, I'm glad you brought it. That was Matt Barnes, if I remember correctly, who gave a little fake to his face. And the difference is Kobe didn't know that was coming. You know, Steph obviously knew what was coming. That I still, to this day, it's like that highlight of Kobe not flinching. If you guys haven't seen that, you go on YouTube or something and look it up, of Kobe Bryant, the inbound pass from Matt Barnes. He like tries to fake him in the face, and Kobe just, it's the most stoic. It's wild. It's actually insane. But yeah, the Steph Curry one, he doesn't flinch. He looks to the side, as I would do, because I don't, if that golf ball is coming up and smashing me in the face, I'd rather hit me in the cheek than the front of the face. But yeah, just advice. And I know Steph's listening to this, and Phil, I don't know if you're listening, but Steph, don't do that anymore. That was fun. Let's not do that.
One was good, but let's not test the luck. You know what I mean? Let's not push the boundaries too much right here.
Yeah. We kind of need you to, because we like we being you and I for this pod, we need you to come on this pod and
we need, you know, can't have a busted face or anything.
Right. It's too, yeah. You don't want to ruin that. Okay. Chris Weems, we ask him in Vegas, and the reason that it still holds true is because it's about development, right? And you and I were just so intrigued by the idea of how to develop Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, James Wiseman, who we've been talking a lot about, Jordan Poole. These are the guys we asked Chris Weems about. Now, at the time, he had not been promoted to this position, or at least it wasn't announced at that point. We don't know if he was in that position at that point. But the point is that what holds true from Vegas is the same, in that these are the key points of where they need to develop these guys. And Chris Weems goes into a deep dive in exactly what the Warriors will be trying to do to make these guys better, where are their strengths right now, and where are their weaknesses. And Kendra, it's a very enlightening interview.
Yeah, and the thing with Weems is that he's worked with players like Jordan Poole, who we mentioned before, but then also for a guy like Jonathan Kuminga, well, Chris Weems faced him when Kuminga was with the G League Ignite. So that wealth of knowledge from either working with players or just watching them play up close and personal is really going to lend itself as Chris Weems takes this next step in his career. And it's really going to come through, I believe, this season as he works with these younger players.
Yeah, and let's not forget, he was the summer league head coach while we were talking to him. So at that point, he was working with these guys very, very closely. You could see, and not only could see what they are doing right, wrong, but also there was, you know, instructions of this is what we need these guys to do better. So he can share all of that. So very excited to share this right now. Enjoy. This is Chris Weems talking to myself and Kendra in Vegas at the Summer League. In the meantime, thank you as always for listening to Dubs Talk, presented by Wendy's. Our guest right now is the Summer League head coach, Chris Weems. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris. And as a coach, you know, everyone is coming to play as a team, obviously, and win. But rightfully so, there's some personal interest at stake here. People are trying to earn jobs, trying to show what they can do in this league. Mm-hmm. But not everyone is going to be a star player in the league. So it's hard. You have to juggle trying to show you can be a role player, but also stand out as that person. How, as a coach, do you try to, you know, let people do what they need to do for themselves while making it work as a team?
It's an interesting balance, and not all players understand it. But I think it's important that we keep saying it. We keep making it known that as a role player for the Golden State Warriors, you're not going to have the ball. You're just not. There's a guy number 30 that has the ball a whole lot. And number 23 has it a lot, and hopefully number 11, Klay Thompson, is healthy. And so you have to be able to orbit, you know, around those guys and really understand the point five mentality we talk about a lot, just knowing what you're going to do when the ball's about to hit your hands and being efficient with your thought process. And so the guys are learning that. Now, our draft picks, maybe they've been expected to do more and have the ball more, but they still fill a role. And so we're trying to help them with their development in terms of what can you bring to the table, what can we count on you for, and still understanding that you play a role, that you fill a specific need for our team. That's why we drafted you. But then also, can you play off of these other guys? And they bought into it, but it's an ongoing process. Film, study, being on the court, and seeing the reps in games.
Right. So you just talked about how, especially with guys like Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody, identifying, okay, how can you help the Warriors? What is that discussion process like with the coaching staff in Golden State of just saying, okay, Chris, you're having the first crack at these guys developing. This is the areas that we really want to see what they look like, how they would fit into this. What are those conversations like?
So we've been having periodically during Summer League some player development meetings specifically focused on the draft picks. Justinian Jessup, who was a draft pick a couple years ago. And then some of the young guys that we like in terms of maybe an Exhibit 10 or somebody that could play in Santa Cruz. The whole thing is we have to lay out kind of what's good for them, what they do really well, and then where are their deficiencies. And once we have those, we can kind of build a plan that makes sense for those guys. Now, the plan is not going to come to fruition right now. It's just not enough time. But we get a lot of good material in terms of what we can teach, what we can reinforce, and then what we can build on as they get into the next stage of their NBA career. They're just starting, but none of them have been in NBA practice. They know nothing about what prep is. And so we have to build those foundational pieces as well as what can we do to keep them on the floor. So that's what those conversations are about now.
Do you like having that first crack of them? Like when you talk about raw talent, this is like the rawest they're going to be in the league.
Yeah, oh, I love it. I love it because as the Santa Cruz head coach the last couple of years, we have a lot of raw talent. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have no clue what they're doing. and then sometimes they really do know what they're doing, but they haven't figured out a way to fit themselves into a team concept. And so it's a challenge, but it's exciting because, like you say, I get the first crack at them, but I also get a chance to develop a relationship with them. I've been fortunate to be with Steve and the staff for a couple years now, and as a head coach, you get to be a part of training camp. So my voice won't be so foreign to them if they happen to, you know, are sent to Santa Cruz. But the more important thing is, like, you're building camaraderie with all the coaches. We're all here to help you get better.
Absolutely. So in that realm, you know, we're talking about two guys that are in Moody and Kuminga that are so young, right? They're still expanding their game. They're trying to learn. You're trying to learn what their strengths are, right? Mm-hmm. And their weaknesses, et cetera. But the question for should they play their first year in Golden State, can they play a role player? For me, I look at it and say, these guys need to play minutes somewhere, right? And when the regular season starts, the scrimmages don't really happen anymore, right? It's not, that doesn't happen, right? So if you're playing only 2 minutes here, 3 minutes here as a role, you're not getting the chance to really hone in on what you do best or get the feel of the game. So how do you balance that, right? How do you say, let's go to your strengths right now? Because the question is win now versus develop for the future, right? How do you balance that as a coaching staff?
I think we have those conversations. I mean, laying out what the plan is for them long term will really tell us what we can do with them short term. And then just being honest with the players, like, we really need you to do A, B, and C. We talk about putting players in a box, and like, then we expand their box or their toolbox and give them more things that can help our team, but then also to show what they can do. It's just an ongoing process. The communication has to be really organized and precise. And then you develop that trust so you can actually coach these players, as opposed to them feeling like it's personal. It's all about their development. It's a business, and we want you to be dialed in on what the business is. And part of that business is improving so you can help that team win.
What have you seen from them now? You know, three games in particularly. I guess let's start with Jonathan Kuminga.
Sure.
What was your first impression of him? Because we keep hearing so raw, but so athletic. The foundation is there. The skills are there. So what was your first impression? And now through these three games, have you seen any growth and development from him?
Well, I'll tell you what, my first impression was from the G League bubble.
Right.
And I was so excited to not have to coach against him. To have him on my team is much more exciting for me. But the raw talent in terms of the physicality, the body, the way he's built at 18 years old, and he's got a quiet poise about him. Like, he doesn't get too worked up, although he gets excited in the games. I need him to just be consistently focused. And so that's one of the things that I've seen from him, is that he might get a little distracted, like most young guys in practice, and dialing into what we really need so it transfers to the court. But he's competitive. He's tough. And I think he's about the team. I asked some of the coaches from the G League Ignite. They said the same thing. He's about the team. He's willing to guard anybody. Didn't matter if it was the 7-foot guy that was 50 pounds heavier than him or the point guard that was, you know, cat quick. So I think his versatility is going to be his thing that keeps him on the floor, gets him on the floor. In terms of Moody, both Jonathan and Moses are both quiet, but I've been able to get a couple smiles out of Moody here and there. Guys have ribbed him, and he's got like a nice way of laughing at himself. But I think he's also very serious about his craft. So he works at his game. He's also a team guy, so it's not about him. And I think that fits into our culture. The big thing for him is the pace of the game. Things are moving fast, throwing a lot of stuff at him in terms of ATOs and being able to adjust to the defensive calls and the coverages. So there's a lot to learn. And at the same time, I think his IQ is what makes him a really good player. Maybe not the quickest or fastest guy, but he thinks the game. And so I think that's something that keeps him on the floor and makes sure that he has a long career. And then Justinian has been the toughness, the mental toughness. He hasn't shot it great, but he's still being aggressive, which we want. The key is figuring out which ones to take, which shots to take. And then, can you still be a playmaker when guys know they have to run at you? Sometimes you have to shoot those, you know, whether it be late clock or the situation calls for it. But then when they do run you off the line, can you go make a play for somebody else and replace and have the footwork to actually do that over and over again? Those are things you have to do when you play with Steph and Clay and Draymond. And so it's encouraging to see all three of the guys really be invested in the team, have great voices on defense, and continue to learn our coverages and our calls. And I think more importantly is just learn how to play hard. Prep for the game, understand what the team is trying to do against you, and then play hard the whole time.
Yeah, it must be tough for a guy like Jessup, for instance, who's a spot-up shooter, right, who's good in open space, catch and shoot. But, you know, with the big club, that happens naturally, right? Mm-hmm. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, everyone's played together. When you're putting together a new team, and again, some people are trying to get theirs right now or whatever, you know, that they need to do right now for their personal career, they probably doesn't get those opportunities as many times in the flow of the offense to just have those catch and shoot openings or the ability to do that. So as you're saying, to pick the right shots, probably it's a little difficult right now because many times he doesn't get the opportunity to have those good shots.
Sure.
Right? I'm assuming that could be part of it a little bit.
That's a big part of it. And then he's learning new teammates. He hasn't played with any of these guys, let alone the draft picks. He knows them a little better because he's spending time with them. But, you know, incorporating, you know, in Sacramento we had, you know, 7-8 different guys than we have now here in Vegas. And so I just give him a lot of credit. He's still allowing us to coach him, which I think is really important. And at the same time, I just hope that he doesn't put the pressure on himself. Like, it's not really about making shots. It's really about playing off of the other guys. Because, like I said, your role is going to be to move the ball, to space the floor. And if you can learn that now, it's going to be easy to transfer those skills over to when it comes to Warriors basketball.
And one more thing about you mentioned Kuminga. He can match up against any position, right?
Absolutely.
You've played him at center a few times already.
Yes.
Is this a sign of things to come in which you're saying that, is this from, you know, the top to bottom, you know, from the front office, the coaching staff, Steve, Are they saying, I'm interested in watching Kuminga play that small ball center? Is this something that we're trying to develop him into?
Yeah, I think when you're going to draft a kid that size, and knowing that his long term, like he's going to be bigger and stronger, he may grow a couple inches taller, his versatility because of the size gives him a chance to stay on the floor longer. And so we did talk about him playing a little bit of five. We still want him to play on the wing, play the three and the four for the most part, work on his ball handling, his passing. But you can be effective as a five. I mean, Draymond Green's a Hall of Famer because he does a lot of the things that Jonathan does. And so we'll be very specific about those times and what we can run, the packages of plays we want to put in there. But the versatility on defense is what really sets him apart.
One thing I want to ask in relation to Jonathan is, you mentioned that you did get to coach against him in the G League bubble, now you're coaching for him, but people were kind of asking, okay, well, how ready is he, or how much of a project is he? How long is it going to take to develop him to be in a place where he can really have some sort of impact? Did he fall in the draft because some people thought that he was a little bit too raw? Mm-hmm. From your vantage point, like, where is he in that process? Do you think people are kind of overreacting to, hey, he's actually not that, you know, raw of a player? Or, you know, yeah, he is raw and needs development, but, you know, where is he?
Yeah, I think when now the players are trending younger, and so to be 18, 19, 20, just thinking about me as a player, I was nowhere near as talented as these guys, but I knew nothing about how to hard to play, how to prep for a game, how to take care of myself, how to eat right. And so they're getting a crash course in this really for the next 2 or 3 years. I don't think he's too raw. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, you add to what he already brings to the table. Like I always already talked about his physicality, his athleticism. Now we just need to raise his level of basketball IQ. And he's already a smart player. Like, to get stuff done as an 18-year-old, basically a high school player playing against pros, you just don't do that and don't know what you're doing. So I think people should take a deep breath, you know, because we're all doing that. But at the same time, we look out, you know, farther away in the future and see what he can do and what's intriguing about him. But right now, the versatility on defense, like I brought up before, the ability to rebound against bigger, stronger guys, and then just figuring out a way to handle the ball better, be able to create for others and shoot the ball better. Like, he's got the foundation built. It's just a matter of putting those fine touches on things.
You say share the ball better and everything. I feel like there's a misconception out there that he's not a willing passer. I think a lot of people kind of put him out there as like this black hole. He gets the ball and he just wants to score, right?
Yeah.
But and which he does want to score, of course.
Yeah.
But he also seems like a willing passer. Is it just finding the consistency of playing within the offense and just kind of spreading it around a little bit?
Definitely. So that's part of playing with the other guys. You know, he had a couple nice passes where he drove. They cut off his driving lane, and Gary Payton, there he is, and he's laying it in or dunking it. And so part of it is just seeing what the defense gives you. Steve Kerr always talks about seeing the pictures. We brought that up a lot with James Wiseman, and he still got a lot to learn. The same thing with Jonathan, the same thing with Moses, with Justinian. They have to see the pictures, and part of that is the game reps. As far as Jonathan being a willing passer, he's unselfish. It's really like, can you draw three people to you? Can you get those eyeballs to look at you and then figure out what the next read is? But he's definitely a willing passer, and I think when the game slows down for him, he will be even more effective as a creator.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned James Wiseman there, so let's ask you about James too. We're talking about, you know, we focus so much on Kuminga and Moody, but James Wiseman was on a real crash course as well last season, and it just happened that it was in the NBA where he was learning basketball. You know, just that small thing. With the team that was expected to win as well. For James Wiseman, you know, it's really unfortunate that he had this injury, but do you expect him, when he comes back healthy into training camp, at least mentally and just knowing the game, do you think he's learned a lot during this process and was able to advance his game even though he's not been on the court?
I think he's learned a tremendous amount. You can't underestimate the value of watching a game, like, and watching it for, you know, letting things sink in and transfer so it will help your game. And fortunately, he can't play. He can't get out there and do as much. He's working. He's doing some shooting now. And, you know, eventually he'll get healthy where he can move around. But I think the big thing is having the ability to watch and then have another veteran sit next to you, or having a coach sit next to you and explain what's happening on the floor, or better yet, you explain it to me. Mm-hmm. You tell me what's going on the floor. So I think if he can get to that level, once he gets to training camp and he's healthy and he's able to get out and play some 5-on-5, the sky's the limit for him. I mean, it's just like Jonathan and Moses and Justinian, it's a crash course. And so James didn't get any of the help. He didn't get the cliff notes. He didn't get any of the study guys or anything like that. So we have to also take a deep breath when it comes to his development. But man, he's a specimen. He's such a nice kid, and I really believe he wants to work on his game. He's committed to being great. So I think the sky's the limit for him too. It's just like, you know, you have to give him time to really grow and develop like he should.
Speaking of having veteran players there next to him watching games, how nice is it to have so many of the Warriors vets here in Vegas? You know, Michael Mulder, maybe he's not a vet, but he's been with the team for a little bit. I know Andrew Wiggins was here, Juan Toscano, some other guys might be coming. How nice is that for these young guys? And maybe guys who aren't guaranteed a spot on the Warriors roster, just to learn from guys who have been around the league for however many years.
It's powerful. Those veteran voices are so important. For one, that they took the time to come here and get a workout. They may not be in our practices, but everybody knows who Steph and Draymond, you know. But now you have Juan, who's a self-made player. You have Jordan Poole, who's starting to make those strides over the last couple years. And they're in here getting their work in, too. And so when they actually support the team at those games, the one powerful message, even before we came to Vegas, Juan was in the locker room, you know, post-game, the second game in Sacramento, and he just said, like, you have to be ready regardless of when your number's called. You may play 5 minutes, you may play 35 minutes, you know, and you may not play your best, but are you okay with the team winning, or do you want to do it your way? And it's never going to be your way as a role player. And so, and I walked in as he was giving this message, and he just kind of shut up. I'm like, whoa, just keep going. Like, whatever I'm saying, like, it's going to be way more powerful from you. And so I think the vet's presence just adds to my credibility and the staff's credibility in terms of what we want to get done and the messaging we want to provide for our young guys. All of them trying to figure it out, and we're going to do our best to help them figure it out.
Jordan Poole, he himself credits you a lot for his development as well. There's a lot of pressure on him to be that scoring weapon. We saw what he can do at the end of last year. It was so impressive, the leap he made from the beginning of the season to the end. It was amazing. I think finishing at the rim, he went from really, like, numbers-wise efficiency, below average. It was, like, poor, to really good. It wasn't like he never got to the average part, you know? He just jumped that. Right. So we saw him jump. The question is, do you think he's ready to be this sixth man scorer that a lot of people think he can be? Do you think the pressure, is he somebody that's ready for that?
100% believe he's ready. A couple reasons why. Like, Jordan's a worker. Like, he's a gym rat. He's going to be in the gym. And not only just being there, some guys go in there and they'll work hard for 30 minutes and then they're messing around for the other 30 or 45. He's working the whole time, full on sweat. He wants to be coached. That was a big thing he said. He's like, I want to be coached and I want to win, when he came to us in the G League bubble. And so we just tried to dial into that. I spent some time with him away from the game, just asking him questions about his life and his background. I said, because I need to know these things so I can get on you in the game, and you know it's not personal. And so we've developed a nice relationship, and I really appreciate him allowing me and the staff to coach him and to give him the tough love, because it just carried over. You know, he came back with a ton of confidence, and I think Steve saw the development as well. He said, hey, we can throw him in here and he can be a second side ball handler, he can be a catch and shoot guy. But then he's also got the confidence to not only score it, but he can also play defense, he can pick a full court, he can play a really good floor game by making, you know, getting assists and making and getting rebounds. And so just playing a complete game, I think, is a really important thing for him. And then fitting in and giving us whatever we need. It might be scoring one night, which he's capable of getting 30, and then it might be 10 assists another night. And then the defensive side of the ball is where he's picked it up, and I think he can make another jump this year. So I'm happy for his success, and I'm hoping for more.
Also, in terms of additions, we talk about the free agents, we talk about this. There's also three new coaches coming in as well. Have you gotten a chance to talk to any of these new coaches yet? And yeah. What are your first impressions of these guys?
Yeah, man, Kenny Atkinson is – he's a – I want to say it the right way. I love Coach. I love Coach. My nephew actually played for him when he was an assistant in Atlanta.
Okay.
In the summer league, and he said, you're going to love being around him. He's got the energy. He's got the toughness, you know. And when you come in with fresh eyes on things and you have a certain way of looking at things, it challenges all of us. And so I've touched base with him a couple of times, asked him some questions. I'm going to dig into that knowledge base for sure.
I heard, you know, the usual has been the vibes are like very relaxed and like, you know, that's the Steve Kerr way. Yes. I heard Kenny Atkinson's not that way. I heard he's a little more structured. And a little more. Not that he can't vibe out and be part of that.
He has good vibes. But he just has a little bark behind the vibes. Yeah. But what I know from watching his teams, you know, and for the Nets, they were always organized. Mm-hmm. and the attack was centered on one piece of the offense, whether it was D'Angelo Russell or if it was Jared Allen, his development, and some of the other guys. Joe Harris was another guy that really played well for him. So I think he's very specific on what he wants to see from his team, and he figures out a way to fit guys into that. So the way he looks at the game, different from any of our current Warriors coaches, but I think it's going to help us out.
He's a guy that's been really credited for player development. How Absolutely. Great is it to see this focus on player development from the coaches, especially when you have all of these young players that need that type of attention?
Well, he's going to drive some of the discussions because he's asking questions. You know, why do we do this, or why is he allowed to do this, or what's his shot profile versus what another guy does? I think it's always just good to have fresh voices, fresh eyes on a program so you can get the most out of your players. And hell, you can challenge your coaches too. And I know Steve likes that.
Right. Yeah, it's just new, fresh eyes, fresh voices in the room that always can help. So thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.